Brother, I don't. I wish I was back in Florida during this period, but I'm not. Now, I was just jumping to the sermon. I was really toying with the idea of, because this message is a bit about, you know, how God gives you what you need exactly when you need it, even before you don't know you need it. How he prepares you to walk in and face whatever you have to face. And to remind you that he is God and he's always with you. So I'm going to give you a brief testimony, if I might. Some time ago, Susan and I, she had the opportunity to transfer to Florida. Our kids were grown. My son was on his own. My daughter was away at school. We always wanted to go to Florida, you know, because that's where Disneyland is. But we went south. And we weren't Christians. And my wife had always been searching for more. You know, she knew there was something deeper than what she had. And she grew up Jewish. And she said, well, something is missing. So I always used to try to help her. And we tried all sorts of things. I mean, crazy stuff. And so we went to Florida. We found a church. And in this church, we sat there and we listened. And it was uncomfortable. It wasn't a good fit. So we stopped going. And I was good. You know, I did my thing. I held my wife. You know, I tried. You know, so I was going to live my moral life. We went to this party we were invited to. And our neighbor had invited me for over a year to attend one of his parties. And I would always say no, you know, because I don't like that, you know, because everything, just too much alcohol, too much drinking, people get crazy. And I don't want to be put in that situation. But he came to me one day, he said, it's a family party. It's my wife's birthday. It's only relatives. And Susan said, you can't keep telling him no. You know, so I said, Walter, all right, we'll go. So we go upstairs, because it's the same condo, right upstairs, and we're sitting there, and there's this couple, and they're intermingling with everybody, and they just seem different. Something about them just stood out, and I couldn't put my finger, and all I could keep thinking, I could really hang with these people. You know, I'm dating myself, say hang, but I could really hang with these people. And as we were leaving, Jackie was the woman of the people we were looking at, and her husband was Joe, cornered us in the kitchen. And she says, where do you go to service? I'm like, what is she talking about? What's service? She says, where do you go to church? And I'm thinking, I'm good. What kind of question is that as we're walking out the door? And she says, I want to invite you to our church. And she turned to Susan because she saw there was nothing here. And Susan said, yes. We're walking down to the condo, downstairs because we lived on the ground floor. And I'm telling her, there is no way I'm going. Not having it. And I get up that morning, after breakfast, we get dressed and go to church. Because that's not the fight you want to pick. You know, for you guys who are starting out, you need to learn how to pick them. That's not one of them. So we go to church, and Pastor Tommy was preaching. And he was saying, who is the hero of your story? My prideful self said, me, of course. You know, look what I did. You know, you guys know that I had a problem with drugs and alcohol. I quit that. We had a house, we have a condo, we have two cars, we have some money. You know, kids are doing well. Pfft, me. And then Tommy says, Jesus is the hero of your story. And I'm like, what is he talking about? You know, and he presents the good news, bad news. He says, we are sinners. We fall short of the glory of God. And Jesus went to the cross for us. He went and presented the gospel. I stood back there and says, that sounds different. My ego, my pride went, you know, because I realized, you know, that none of that was me, that was him. You know, so we attend this church. God bless us with a group of people that were mature in their faith. There was a church plant that left that church. And I said, well, you know, we'll go. So we go to this plant 6 months after they planted, and God continuously working us, provided us with, we've done it once here before, sacred marriage. And there was nothing wrong with our marriage, but what it did was just strengthen it. And we were able to resolve some issues that we didn't even realize we had had. We had a community group that was insane. We did a thing called redemption, and that was biblical counseling. We were able to work out some personal issues. Individually. And I did celebrate recovery. And then we get a call that we had to go back home. You know? God had been using that time in Florida, the 10 years that we were there, to prepare us to come back home. Here I go. And deal with what we had to deal with. It's almost 4 years and I still fall apart. To deal what we had to deal with. You know, so God knows exactly what you need when you need it. Yeah, so wherever you're at in your walk, wherever you're at in life, know that God is there and he's working in you. You're not alone. All right. I did do it. All right. This morning, we will be in Psalm 77. And again, this psalm was given to me, you know, by the Lord, because I needed it at this particular time. The psalm speaks to every life situation we find ourselves in. And from the hard to the most difficult, from questioning where is God in our darkest moments of despair, to praising God for his holiness and his faithfulness to us, even when we're not. Now, the majority of the 150 psalms written by David, they say David wrote about 75 and there were some other writers. And the person we're going to speak who wrote Psalm 77 was called Asaph. Now, I had to Google how to pronounce Asaph because I kept thinking Asaph, the F was silent. But you know, Asaph is not it. It's Asaph. All right. As I was preparing this message, Susan received a text from her girlfriend, her girlfriend's daughter, one of her best friends that she's been best friends for a long time, to say that her mother was going into hospice. As I was continuing working on my sermon, 7 hours later, we received another text that her friend went home to be with the Lord. Before I was even on page 3, you know. But God gave her something she didn't know she needed. Friends out of the woodwork called her because they knew the relationship that those two had, and they lifted her up. I like to mention Beth, because Beth's dearest friend is in hospice now. And last Sunday, she came, received communion, and went and served her, and spent the day taking care of her, because it's a difficult thing to go through. And so I would like us, as we go through the week, to continue to pray for her as she walks through this, because it's a difficult time. Sue and I know that. It is hard. All right. You know, this particular psalm reminds me that God is praiseworthy. It reminds me of his sovereignty, that he's over everything. A former pastor of mine, the first church I went to, used to say, God is large and in charge. I thought that was a weird thing to say, God is large and in charge. You know, that was a new Christian. I wasn't even a Christian yet. I was new to church. And he kept saying it. Every Sunday he would say, God is large and in charge. And then one day, you know, or if you think about it, who in our existence, who is omnipotent, you know, all-powerful? Who do you know who's omniscient? All-knowing, knows all that there is in the world, knows what is, what was, and what's to come. Or who do you know that is omnipresent, is everywhere, at all times, at once? And there's only one person, and that's our Trinitarian God. He is all those things. You know, Psalm 77, written by Asaph, was a Levite appointed to David to attend the Ark of the Tabernacle and lead worship. You know, he was the first worship leader, and I'm quite sure he did not wear skinny jeans. You know, and I'd like to take a moment to thank our worship team that leads us in worship every Sunday, because they prepare our hearts in worshiping God to receive the word each and every Sunday. And that's a special gift that they have, and I'm also glad that they share it with us. Psalm 77 shows us two heart postures. The psalmist was experiencing then, and now thousands of years later, we experience those same postures when we meet difficult situations. You know, there's no difference between 2,000 years ago and today. You know, so Solomon was right when he said there's nothing new under the sun. Pain then people experience is the same pain we experience now. It's just that the date on the calendar is different. You know, we will see pain and despair In the second half of the psalm, we will see his heart shift towards remembrance. Let me read the psalm. It's a long psalm, so bear with me. I cry aloud to God, and he will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I considered the days of old, the years long ago. I said, let me remember my song of the night. Let me meditate in my heart. Then my spirit made a diligent search. Will the Lord spurn me forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at the end of all times? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion, Selah? Then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work and meditate on all your deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might amongst the peoples. With your arm you redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph, Selah. When the waters saw you, O God, when the waters saw you, they were afraid. And deep, the deep trembled. The clouds poured out. The skies gave forth thunder. Your arrows flashed on every side. The crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Your lightning lifted the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way through the sea, your path through the great waters, yet your footprints was on sea. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. The word of the Lord. You know, we hear the pain. We hear Aesop's pain in the first three verses. Right off the bat, he's crying aloud to the God. And he says, in my day of trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my arms stretched out without worrying. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints. Asaph, in his anguish, he cries out to the Lord again and again and again. But you have to notice what Asaph does. I keep saying Sap, huh? What Asaph does and doesn't do in his anguish. He doesn't turn away in pain. He doesn't turn away in his pain from God. He doesn't blame God, nor is he angry with God. And sometimes we take those postures, you know. We think it's God's fault. You know, we blame him for whatever it is we're experiencing. But what it does say, he cries out. And in crying out, he's turning to God. He knows God has heard him in the past, and he believes he's going to hear him now. So he continues to seek the Lord earnestly, praying, possibly pleading for his help, desperately wanting to be heard once again. You know, church, my question, how do you face your difficulties when you come across them? Do you turn away in anger? Do you blame God? Or do you turn to the Father for his help, his comfort, his guidance? Or do you do it like Asaph, wanting to be heard? You know, he's praying all night. I mean, his arms are stretched, wearing, stretched out towards God. His body's praying. And with all his praying, he doesn't feel comforted. And no matter how hard he prays or how long, he prays nothing. It's like blank. It's like he's just lying there by himself and saying God is completely absent. He's overwhelmed, even when he thinks of God. And I've never experienced this completely, but his heart sinks. You know, it's too painful to even think about God in whatever anguish he's going through. And I think the reason to that is that something's blocking him. Something's stopping him from feeling God's comfort or his presence as he did in the past. Yeah, I'm probably safe in saying that at some point in your life, you've been right where Asaph is, arms stretched out, crying, your heart out to Jesus, because your struggle you face is unbearable. And maybe you're experiencing that right now as we sit here. Yeah. You know, because we all go through things. I say this often. You know, we all go through things. There's things in our family. There's illnesses in our family. You know, sometimes how you see life and what you plan for it doesn't happen, so you become extremely discouraged and you want to quit, give up, and walk away. Sometimes you think you're making progress and you don't, with some sin that you've, is haunting you. Sometimes it's some shame, something that you've experienced or sinned against, guilt, or even pride. And we don't realize pride. Pride is very sneaky. It just creeps up. And you don't oftentimes know that you're being prideful. Yeah. So you might think Asaph's crying out to the Lord, as you have, is different. I'm relatable. He's just some old Levite pastor, worship leader of the past. And how can that possibly relate to me? You know, and I say again, it's the same 1,000 years ago, thousands of years ago, as it is today. Do you know there's another group of people who had cried out to the Lord? And they cried for 400 years. 400 years they cried as they suffered. You know, they believed God was silent to their suffering, that he'd abandoned them as they suffered, and that he'd allow Pharaoh to be cruel and enslave them. But what they didn't know was that in that silence that they felt, God had already been working for them. They didn't realize that he was already preparing a promised land for them to go to, that he was going to take them out of bondage. But they felt he left them. And God did hear. And he sent Moses and Aaron to free them from the captivity and bring them into the promised land some 40 years later, because just like they were, we are hard-necked, stubborn people sometimes. And God works in you to get you to where he needs to get you to. Yeah. You know, a better picture is someone who cried out. And cried out to the Lord long before you took your first breath. Cried out to the Lord long before anything we knew existed. It was Jesus. Jesus cried out to the Lord long before us. We see his sorrow and pain and his response in Matthew 26. On the night he was going to be betrayed, went to the Garden of Gethsemane. He went there with Peter, James, and John to pray. And we read in verse 38. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here," he tells them, "and watch with me." And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And again, Jesus prayed a second time, "My Father, if this cup cannot pass unless I drink, your will be done." He prayed and prayed for, he prayed that prayer for a third time. And it says in the Gospel of Luke, in all his anguish and despair, his Father sent him an angel to help strengthen him. Now, Jesus knows your trouble. He prayed to the Father. He cried out three times to the Father that he would not have to drink from the cup of wrath that awaited him. And that cup was filled with our sins. And he knew what that was going to be. Yes, your circumstances can never compare to what Jesus faced. Never. Nor could we ever do what he did. That's why he did it for us. And not to minimize your situation, Jesus knows your pain. He has not left you alone. He's left you with the indwelling Holy Spirit. As God sent an angel, you have the Holy Spirit dwelling inside you to help guide you and strengthen you, to help walk with you through whatever you're experiencing. And we read in Psalm 18 and again in Isaiah 65, "In my distress, I called upon the Lord. To my God, I cried for help. For in his temple, he heard my voice, and my cry to him reached his ears." Isaiah, "Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear." God knows exactly what you're experiencing before you even speak. Before you know what to ask for, he sees what you're going through. He knows better than you know. I mean, he's known the pain and sorrow that I've experienced since coming to Christ. You know, and oftentimes people say, you know, I'm a Christian. I'm going to become a Christian. And the world's going to be great. Everything's going to be rosy. You know, but I'm going to tell you, in the 15 years I've been a Christian, I have gone through deaths. I've been discouraged. I have seen so much. I have had so many family problems, extended family problems, not Susan and I. And, you know, so, but what got me through that, what helped me through that is the Lord, because he's in the midst of that with you. You're never, ever alone, you know. He provides people for you. Yeah. I mean, when I was, before I became a Christian, I was, his back in Vietnam. I was about to join the service because it was June in high school. And I didn't think I was going to college. And I was going to go to the service. I was going to join. And I knew I was going to go to NOC. A guidance counselor came in front of me. I didn't know this guy. I'd seen him before. He worked with the really smart kids, you know, those SB kids. And he said, Anthony, what are you doing, you know, when you graduate high school? I said, probably going to the service. What else? Okay. He says, how would you like to go to college? I looked at him. I said, it's June. College starts in September. How do we make this process happen? And he did. He got me in all places, a kid from the Bronx, going down the wrong path, a parochial college. I mean, God took me and put me in a college full of Christians. God pursues you. I mean, I did not listen. Yeah, it didn't go well that first year. I transferred to a secular college where I did a little better. But God will take you. He knows what you need. He knew I needed that, and he put me there to stop me from the path I was about to go. You know, so God knows. You know, what's interesting is that the psalmist doesn't tell us what the problem was. He doesn't say what he was experiencing. Some scholars say it was a community of fear. Some say it was a church of fear. Some say it was just something that he was going through himself. You know? And I think the reason why we're not told is that you can fill in whatever it is that you're experiencing as you read through this psalm. You know? You can put your own personal situation in that. But what the psalm does tell us is what he did again and what he didn't do and what he shouldn't do. He didn't crawl up in a ball and abandon all hope. Yeah, because sometimes when your trials are too hard, you just want to shut the world off. You want to isolate. You want to stay away from people. And that is spiritually unhealthy. It is just plain unhealthy because there are people who are here that want to come alongside you and walk that tough walk that you're walking. You know, some of you people know exactly what I'm saying, you know. But what he did do, he continued to pray. He continued seeking God for answers and comfort. And that's what we should do. Pray, keep praying. And when necessary, and it's always necessary, seek others to pray for you. You know, because God works in the prayers. God answers prayers, you know. Ask God also to search your heart for any unrepented sin. Because sometimes if you're harboring some sin, you impede what he wants to do for you or make it a little longer to get to the point where he wants to bring you. Verse 4. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I considered the days of old, the years long ago. I said, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. Then my spirit made a diligent search. Will the Lord spurn me forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in his anger shut up his compassion? You know, Asaph is still struggling. Despite remembering God's past comfort, you know, whatever is troubling his heart is so great, he can't close his eyes. He can't sleep at night. Because he's unease. He's in turmoil. Nor can he gather his words or thoughts to really express what he's experiencing or what he's going through. You know, he was stuck. We've all been stuck. No, I have. You know, and as we get stuck, you know, because we can get stuck sometimes when the burden that we're carrying is just too hard to bear because we want to carry it by ourselves. And we're not supposed to carry it by ourselves. We're supposed to have someone walk alongside you, you know. Excuse me. You know, for us sometimes, it's like stepping into quicksand. Slowly being pulled down, you look around for something to grab on, something to help you as you're sinking. You know, the one person to grab onto is Jesus. Jesus can lift you out. Jesus will lift you out. Remember to reach out to Jesus when you're stuck, and only Jesus, because he's the answer each and every time. It is only Jesus. We fool ourselves when we think it's ourselves that can do it. We fool ourselves when we think it's someone else that can pull us out of our misery. We fool ourselves when we think it's someone else who can fill the void that we have in our heart. The only person that fills that is Jesus. Side note. I say it often. Whenever you're going through, be it joy or a difficult situation, we're a church that would like to come alongside you. You just have to speak up. And I know it's difficult for you because I will tell you, I am the worst person in the world to ask for prayer. I just don't do it. It takes a long time for me. I mean, I got to be almost down on my knees to reach out and ask for prayer. But when necessary, I do because I know I can't do it by myself. I need everyone else to intercede with me to God and pray for me. So I ask that you would do that. That you humble yourself to ask for help. Yeah. Because it's like quicksand. There's no bottom to quicksand. It'll kill you. You know, Asaph questioning once again how God had hurt him in the past, yet doesn't hear him now. You know, doubt at this point has creeped into his spirit. He was just seeking God. Excuse me. He was wondering whether God had forgotten him. He felt God's love had left him. He knew God in his heart had grace. He stopped being gracious and merciful towards him. He doubted that the promises that God has made throughout history and the covenants he's made were for other people and not just him. And you say to yourself, you know, and probably do say to yourself at times, God, where's your compassion? For filling whatever your struggle is. Do you see my struggle? Do you see what I'm going through? Do you even care? Are you too busy? Am I not that important to you? You know, have your promises, your grace, mercy left? Where's your comfort? What did I do to you to remain silent in my distress? I mean, because sometimes we feel like that. You know, we feel God just forgot about us, like the Israelites felt. But he's not. He never did. Yeah. Excuse me. And when you get to this point, you may think what I'm going to say is crazy. Yeah, and I'm a little crazy. I do admit that. But this is the best place to land. It really is the best place to land with your doubt. Because this type of doubt is a good thing. Because you're still seeking answers from the Lord. You're still asking. You know, you're questioning. You're not turning away from him. You're seeking him. You know, you're trusting that, you know, at some point he's going to answer you. And you should. Particularly, this might be why God kept Asaph's eyes open. You know, because he allowed him to close. How he allowed him to go to sleep. He may have sunk deep into his despair. He would never arrive at the heart shift that he's going to do. Excuse me, come to in the next several verses. Excuse me, I have seasonal allergies, so when the weather changes, it just kills me. Yeah. And plus, I'm a Floridian. Then I said in verse 10, then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work, meditate on your mighty deeds. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is like, What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the people. You, with your arm, redeemed the people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. Asaph remembered, more likely, God opened his mind and his heart to remember. I mean, because previously he'd been struggling to remember. And the only way that you can remember is like what I asked this morning. God, please remove any distraction. Open my eyes to hear your word. And that's what the Lord did to him. You know, he removed the distraction. He opened his eyes to remember. He opened him to receive the questions to the doubt that he had had. Isn't that what we want when our burdens are great? To have God quiet your heart, to hear him say to you, be still and know that I am God. And he says again, be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, dread being your struggle. For it is the Lord your God, who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. I mean, these verses should be pretty comforting. You know, you may still find it hard, but if you allow God in, if you stop your struggle, he will still the troubles of your soul. He will encourage you and help erase your fear, because he is the God of Israel, who is always with you and will never leave you. You know, so what was Asaph's response to the hardship? Instead of asking God, where are you? He appealed to the years of his mighty hand. The years preceding him and during his own personal past, when the powerful hand of the Almighty God had worked throughout history. Asaph's heart is finally being uplifted. His heart shifted from the struggle that he was going, the inability to hear and feel God, to remembering God's wonderful deeds that he's done. You know, where before, when he meditated on God, his heart just sank to a pit in despair and question. But now here, he sings with joy, recalling God's wonderful acts of the past, the work God has done in all his people, the memory of God's mighty works, and now something he can finally rest in. He finally realized that God's way is holy, and there is no God like our God. You know, so all those little gods that you turn to, all those little mini idols that you do, they will never help you. I've tried them years ago. They don't work. The only thing that works is Jesus. Is Jesus. You know, this helped him out of despair. You know, I pray that whatever trial you're facing, as James says, will face, because if there's not one now, there will be one to face. There will be one to face and walk through someday in the future. I pray you realize what took Asaph so long to come to trust in, to be able to trust in quicker than he had. I hope you trust in the words of Samuel and Moses. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in gracious deeds, doing wonders? And there is none holy like the Lord, for there is none besides you. There is no rock like our God. He's the rock to plant our life on. You know, our powerful God hears you. He knows what you're experiencing. He's not silent. Because in that silence that you sometimes feel, he's working in the heat of your situation. He's working in you. When your memory goes dim, you have the benefit of reading the Bible to see all that God has done for his people in the past, to know that he's still going to do things for you in the future. He won't leave you where you are. You know, he just won't. And you'll also see that he's just when justice is required, because sometimes things happen in the world, in life, that you think that's unfair. It's not your job to take control of that. It's the Lord's. You know, we have to have faith and rest in him, because God is holy. In his holiness, we see his character. In his holiness, there's God. There's only good. The goodness and his goodness shines into our darkness. His holiness, excuse me, and his holiness, evil cannot, does not, nor will ever exist. It is through the power of his work in our heart that brings us from death to life, because he loves us, he cares for us. And as the redeemed children of Jacob and Joseph, he's redeeming us also to him. Now, these same attributes we see in the Father are the same attributes we see in the one who prayed, "Father, take this cup for me." Jesus never needed a heart shift. When he was in that garden praying, he didn't need a heart shift, as Asaph did, or as we do when things become too difficult to obey. Jesus knew that the only way for God to redeem us, as he did for the children of Jacob and Joseph, was to take that cup we could never drink from. You know, part of God's work in us is Jesus. And his willingness to go to the cross in our place to receive the wrath we should have taken, to take that cup for us. And he died drinking that cup, rose again on the third day, ascended into heaven, where he now sits at the right hand of the Father. And we get to live in his righteousness because we have none of our own. And all you righteous people who think you are righteous, think again. God went to the cross for that very thought. Verse 16. When the waters saw you, O God, when the waters saw you, they were afraid. Indeed, the deep trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies grew forth thunder. Your arrows flashed on every side. The crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Now, if you look at Exodus, this never happened in the parting of the Red Sea. I searched to find out where this was, and a lot of scholars say that Asaph was using poetry just to explain the mightiness of the Lord himself, his power in his work. You know, but these type of events did happen throughout the Bible, but the most important quake and the one that we are so grateful for occurred in Matthew 27. And that was as Jesus cried out again in a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And the earth shook and the rocks were split. This should give you great comfort with the troubles that you face. Because when Jesus took his last breath, the curtains of the temple, separating the holy from the most holy places, tore in half, opening up access to God. We have access to the Lord Jesus Christ, our intercessor, to the Father, like no one's had. Like, we just have that. Let's go somewhere else. You know? Lastly, your way was through the sea, your path was through the great waters, yet your footprints were unseen. You led your people like a rock in the hand of Moses and Aaron. Asaph came to know whatever was the reason for his anguish. He had to do as the Israelites had to do during their dilemma facing the uncrossable Red Sea and the army of Pharaoh heading right at them. They had to trust in the Lord. They could not see. They had to trust in the one they grumbled against during that walk in the desert so many times. They had to be still, as we have to be still, and know that God was silently working in his struggle. They had to, as we must have, faith that God is working for you. Now, no matter what that struggle, what keeps you up at night, or when your memory of God's past works in your life has faded, and you feel unheard from him, and you believe he's gone silent towards you, I urge you to pray. I urge you, don't get discouraged, but pray some more. Because God is with you. Be assured he's working in your struggle, just as he did with the Israelites, stuck between the sea and an army. God parted the sea for them and made a way through. And he will make a way through whatever it is that you're experiencing. Yeah. I shared this once before, I think. I'm going to do it again. It's called Footprints in the Sand. And I really like this. I mean, I don't know about people, but I like it. Yeah. And it's a poem. There's no author. There are many people who have taken credit for it, but it doesn't matter because the words are good. One night I dreamed a dream as I was walking along the beach with my Lord. Across the dark skies flashed scenes from my life. For each scene, I noticed two sets of footprints in the sand, one belonging to me and one to my Lord. After the last scene of my life flashed before me, I looked back at the footprints in the sand. I noticed that at many times along the path of my life, especially at the very lowest and the saddest times, there was only one set of footprints. This really troubled me, so I asked the Lord about it. Turned to the Lord. Lord, you said once I decided to follow you, you will walk with me all the way. But I noticed that during the saddest and the most troublesome times of my life, there was only one set of footprints. I don't understand why. When I needed the most, you would leave me. He whispered, my precious child, I love you and will never leave you. Never, ever during your trials and testing, when you saw only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. God carries us. He will never leave us. Whenever you struggle, whatever it is that you go through, know that the Father is with us, and He will always be with you.